It's the Hump Day edition. I think it's still Hump Day. The happier happy hour edition version. And we're happy because we got a brand new guest. She is the returning champ. She is Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, Margaret Maggie Dawn. Maggie, how you doing? So great to see you.
Good to see you guys as well. Pretty good. It's been a beautiful week here in Milwaukee, so trying to enjoy that.
Enjoying the glorious weather. I saw that Brostoff got him kind of shook up on Righty Whitey Talk Radio with talk of shouldn't have the airplanes on the lakefront. That's just too much for the locals. Do you have any opinions on that?
So let me just speak to a bigger point. I think Democrats would do well to not mind themselves with issues of small scope importance, right? That a lot of people will scoff at. I don't know if Brostoff is listening, but that would be one of them. Like, that's fine for like fireside chats or, you know, talking with your friends. But the vast majority of people, that's not what impacts the day-to-day quality of their lives. Of course, he's got to represent his constituents, some of whom live in an area where, you know, the Blue Angels might not be so fun. I personally love getting my bell rung as they, like, you know, give me a drive-by or a fly-by, like Tom Cruise style, right? Like, that's good fun, but, you know,
buzz the tower.
Right, buzz the tower. Super fun. And I've heard a lot of people articulate different opinions about the air and water show, specifically less about, oh, gee, I'm trying to take my afternoon nap and it wakes me up, but actually about the living things that don't have any choice about where they are or whether or not they put earplugs in, and that it can, in fact, be extremely disruptive to wildlife, as can fireworks displays. So a topic for another day. But like, don't say that stuff out loud, Jonathan Brostoff. Like, that's just not going to win you any friends nor influence a lot of people.
Well, Maggie, let's talk about something of some importance. The U.S. Senate race, the race to replace Ron Johnson, perhaps. But first, the Democrats have to pick a nominee. And we've seen a couple of front runners fall out, drop out this week. Tom Nelson apparently out of cash. Tom Nelson dropped out, endorsed Mandela. And then Alex Lazary, and I think both Dom and I were startled at the news that Alex Lazary dropped out of the race, just $12 million in. Do you have any opinions on the shaping up race between Mandela Barnes and Godlewski? Is it over, or has Godlewski suddenly got a fighting chance?
Yeah, that, I think everybody was like, say what? Alex Lazary isn't going to spend all of his dad's money to, you know, win himself a Senate seat. Let's just talk first about that. I'm disgusted by the fact that whether you're talking about Alex Lazary, Ron Johnson, Sarah Godlewski, or other local elected, former elected officials of great means, that apparently now the requirement to win elected office, it seems more and more, is that you're a millionaire. And if not that, of course, that you have a couple of key donor funders. I don't think that that helps particularly local politics much at all. And in fact, I think can quite tank the water, if you will. So I was happy to see Alex leave for that reason. He's not of here. He's not from here. He didn't even get his current job that he's supposedly on leave from. You know, without his dad having to buy the business more or less. I don't think that those things are what are appropriate qualifiers to be a senator from the state of Wisconsin. That said, I think, you know, given the importance of the Dobbs decision and Sarah Godlewski's commitment to bodily autonomy as a key component of civil rights and her prior commitment before the Dobbs decision and even before the Alito decision was leaked is going to help her. Gee whiz, I'm all for another female senator. Gee whiz, I'm all for a Black senator from Wisconsin. Alleluia, I'll take more of that. I have to say, you know, Sarah Godlewski, a woman of great means. What I think is really compelling in this moment is as we look at some of the folks that have won elections recently, locally and on a slightly bigger stage, for the first time, we've got a Black mayor of Milwaukee, we've got a Black county executive, we've got a Black sheriff, and we've got a Black chief of police, we've got a Black county board chairperson, we've got a Latino common council president. Holy crap, am I in Milwaukee? Like, is this Wisconsin? So, you know, continuing the succession of firsts and groundbreaking improvements that I hope speak to the broader trajectory, despite Trumpism of the moment and of the probably balance of the decade, that here in Wisconsin, we can elect people who are exactly like Mandela Barnes, that we can elect a guy like Mandela Barnes, who doesn't have a perfect financial past. I was impressed by Mandela's courage in sharing, and his mother's courage in sharing, that she had had an abortion, yeah. Right? Like that ad, I just went, yep, we, you know, abortion is not something that women should be ashamed of. Their stories should be heard. So there's a lot of things about Mandela's candidacy, who he is, and I think what he represents potentially for Wisconsin that I find really appealing. I always want to see women in positions of power. I have liked what Sarah has had to say about bodily autonomy and the dignity of healthcare for all and the importance of those things to our overall community wellness. So, you know, I look forward to some spirited debates. I think Wisconsin will be better served with either one of those candidates as opposed to the idiot, sycophant, unthinking man who is Ron Johnson.
You mean Dom's buddy? Maggie, I was a little miffed when Mandela Barnes, who is the lieutenant governor and would be an incumbent and could help add his dynamism to Tony Evers' campaign, let's say. I mean, did a lot of age averaging on the campaign trail last night. Right. A lot of jokes around that aspect that, you know, Mandela and Tony are different generations. But Mandela's also, you know, of a different race and of a different city and sort of a different culture than a guy like Tony Evers. And I think he was appealing. I think he did turn out the vote in different districts of the state. Well, I was very nervous for the governor's campaign when Mandela said, I'm running for U.S. Senate, and I'm not anointing him yet. I think Godlewski's still got a chance, but I think the momentum is with Mandela, and I think that he probably will be the nominee. Will he help turn out low-propensity midterm voters when Democrats don't often do that? But the Democrats haven't always had a compelling candidate like Mandela Barnes at the top of the ticket.
All I have to say on that point is, if you don't feel compelled to vote now, like, when exactly? Like, what's the big, like, the planet is on fire. Women's rights have been eroded. The prospect of, like, interracial marriage becoming potentially constitutionally infirm at a federal level looms large. You know, contraceptive access is at issue. Oh, yes. And a sitting president just on Monday, our former sitting president just on Monday, doubled down on people that tried to stage a coup, right? And said, these people should get pardons, lots of pardons. That's what I would do. I mean, what else do you need to get you motivated to vote? This has been a problem in the Democratic Party for what, the last 30 years? It's like, we're a big tent. And so, gosh, if you don't have the candidate that exactly matches all of your personal, like, big motivating issues on all fours all the time, then, oh, I'm going to keep my cheesy poofs and, like, go home and not vote. Just grow up. Like, these are the candidates. But to answer your question, I don't think, you know, Sarah versus Mandela is going to be the deciding swing. Do I think you probably pick up some suburban college educated women with Sarah? Yeah, because people are still subconsciously biased and don't work out their crap, right? I mean, like, that's basically what it is. More comfortable voting for that nice white lady with the glasses, you know? That's a sad reality, but yeah. I don't think that on margin wins or loses much I think either people find what has happened to be absolutely abhorrent in the extreme, they're going to get out and cast a vote for a Democratic Senate candidate to send the sycophant, idiot, and unthinking, Trump-loving dip blank, you know, Ron Johnson home, right? I beeped myself, Mike. I beeped myself.
Well done. Well, we're going to restrain Maggie.
So, Maggie, should we put you down for credentials to Trump in Waukesha next Friday?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I want Donald Trump to see my face at one point in time in his life and tell that rabid, knuckle-dragging, dippy crowd to, like, kick my butt. Bring it on. Anytime. Happy to go rile up the MAGA folk.
Well, the MAGA is coming, not just for in Wisconsin for next week for Tim Michaels, but apparently Trump is also coming to Wisconsin at the end of August for his, you know, America's Grift Tour, where you can, you know, go and, you know, watch it on TV for $9. But if you want to get the real deal, it's going to cost you almost $4,000. Maggie, and we've seen some news. Maybe we'll get into some of the breaking headlines of the last couple of days, and certainly since we've spoke. Overall, are you concerned? I am concerned. Are you concerned? Should I be concerned, in your opinion, that the lack of prosecution for the planners, not just those that executed the, you know, the coup on the ground, as it stands right now, emboldens these Republicans? And so Donald Trump comes out, Marjorie Taylor Greene says her things, Steve Bannon says his things, because there haven't been really much accountability yet.
Yeah, I'm concerned about it. You know, laws have to be enforced to have meaning. Otherwise, they're just words written in a book that no one reads or pays any attention to. Clearly, the president hasn't read the Constitution, and if he has, he doesn't understand a word of it. Yeah, it matters. Now, we saw the feds ask for the longest sentence we've seen in any of the criminal convictions related to the January 6th. They asked for 15 years. We know that what's the VP Pence's chief of staff?
Jacobs just, and was the attorney.
Mark Short just testified to a grand jury. Yeah, that's interesting. We should talk more about that.
I think we will talk more about that.
You know what I want to talk about, Maggie, as we go to break and we bring it back on the other side?
Okay.
RNC MKE 2024.
Oh, no.
Thumbs up or thumbs down, sister? Are you happy? Are you pissed?
Anything that brings jobs and money into Milwaukee, I'm a fan of. And let's shout him down.
Don would accuse you and the city of Milwaukee of cashing fascistic checks.
War profiteering.
I cash all the checks, and so does Don. Don't let him kid you. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. More Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Council. Our friend.
The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. We will take your calls this hour at 844-967-2789.
Oh, more importantly, we're going to talk to our friend, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, Maggie Dawn, attorney at law. Maggie, let me ask you. I am waiting for an indictment of substantial proportions. I'm looking for Merrick Garland Day up in here. But if there's any place where it seems like there's specific investigations going on, it's the false elector scheme and the pressuring on the vice president prior to January 6th. And there's a paper trail. Is it more likely? I mean, you've been there. You've been inside these courtrooms. Do you think it's more likely if we see a prosecution, we're going to see prosecutions of a number of Republican officials because they're all caught up in the fake elector part of the coup scheme?
I think that's probably what you would see before high-level White House officials, right? You'd see that. And indeed, it's the very thing that, like, the hot potato that Ron Johnson's like, no, I got it from the guy in Pennsylvania. What are you talking about?
I'm on the phone.
I gave it to the guy who gave it to the guy, but it never happened, so nothing to see here. I mean, yes, there will be a paper trail. I think also it's what either has come out before grand jury and or will come out, whether you're looking at the Georgia investigation or the Department of Justice investigation. it is the lawyers involved in drafting it were within the administration, plus craziness, Sidney Powell, right, the Kraken lady, and then Giuliani. But Eastman was part of the administration. Okay, so who did Eastman meet with? Where did he get the draft from? There should be emails with this stuff attached. Doesn't matter if it's in your personal or your work email, it is obtainable. The DOJ has much broader ability to get from cell phone companies, cell phone, text message, and other data. Riddle me this, how is it possible that the Secret Service just made disappear from the ephemera these text messages? Everybody keeps saying that. Well, there's a difference between an inspector general and a criminal probe with an impaneled grand jury being led by the Department of Justice. Those are different things. So right now we understand that it certainly appears that the Trump-appointed inspector general for the Secret Service, maybe a couple other two or three people, certainly felt like there were some things that maybe needed to get deleted in the aftermath of January 6th. So you take those two things together, like what actually does the FBI have in its possession that is digital information that's related to who was saying what, when, what documents were given to whom, with whose approval, etc. There's just a lot of smoke right now. I don't know if we're going to know the full picture before the midterms. I think that is why the January 6th committee, wisely, in my opinion, said we have to begin. We're going to sort of architect the story, right? And they've dealt with different pieces of what happened, different elements of that question. And they've simply continued as new information comes in, they layer it back in, they revisit some points, they add it on to the next sort of chapter that they're writing. I think they've pulled out a lot of information that clearly has indicia of criminal wrongdoing. I think the hearing last Thursday, I was sort of gobsmacked as I was listening to it. And I always said, stop saying that Trump wasn't doing anything. You know he was doing something, right? He wasn't just, oh, I'm going to take a nap. No. This was like his big moment, right? These are his people. They're real angry. They want to, you know, kill Nancy Pelosi and hang Mike Pence. Like, this is his big moment. At minimum, we all knew he was watching the television. Right? Like, no. Right. Big surprise he was watching the television in the dining room. I mean, of course, can we get his lunch order, please, from Mickey D's? But I digress. And here, the one thing from that hearing on Thursday that absolutely blew my mind is that the call log is inaccurate, the presidential call log, and that they threw the photographer out. That's what you call consciousness of guilt, folks. Like, you know that you're actively sitting in the White House Oval Office dining room committing a crime. You probably don't want the call log and like the photographer taking pictures of all of that.
Yeah, but they did allow in the documentarian, did they not? They just wanted their own version of the history to be told.
That's not my understanding. There is a big difference between, you know, what the official call log is and what some political hacky campaign person is going to record. One is effectively the designee of the National Archives. There are legal requirements to preserve records of these things. The same, of course, applies to the Secret Service, which, of course, is a violation of federal law. If they actually lost these, they didn't lose them, somebody deleted them. But all of that, there is a certain amount of norm and formality that attaches to the presidential photographer, to the White House call log. These things were intentionally altered or edited or asked to leave the room. Very different, in my opinion, very different concerns. All of this points to, again, consciousness of guilt.
Maggie, we're going to get you for one more segment because I feel like we have a lot to talk about here. So if you don't mind sticking around, but we'll start with this. Over the last couple of weeks, perhaps since the last time you've been on the show, emails coming out detailing the quote unquote fraudulent fake electors, you know, and then they said, well, maybe we should call them altered. It, you know, it sounds better. And you put something in quotes and maybe it doesn't seem, you know, so criminal. The Department of Justice investigating Merrick Garland last week held in a press conference yesterday, last night, NBC with Lester Holt coming out and saying specifically We are. This will take it where it takes us, basically, right? We're going to go after whoever we need. It feels to me that the Department of Justice, and we have new news today about Donald Trump being perhaps certainly a subject, if not a target, that this is starting to wind up, Maggie Dawn, and that Merrick Garland, with his, he said more words in last week than he did in the last 6 months. It seems to me he's grooming the Republicans to get ready for the bomb. Maggie Dawn, you don't have to answer that question right now. We got 30 seconds, so stick around, think about it, pray on it, come back with us. We are the Devil's Advocates, our pal, Maggie Dawn.
Dominic, we'd also like to listen and welcome all the listeners in Minnesota. Your Twinkies just got bombed by the Brewers. 10-4 Brewers. Welcome to the politics. Right here, Devil's Advocates and more, Maggie Dawn.
The big and tall of political talk. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back. Hump Day Happier Happy Hour. More Maggie Dawn. It's always better with more Maggie Dawn.
It always is.
Maggie, appreciate you sticking around. Dominic, I'm going to let you go first.
All right. So we ended the last segment. The emails coming out of the conspiracy, the conspirators talking about the fake, false, alternate electors. The DOJ coming out and of course, presumably, this is another question I guess I want to get to you. Your thoughts on where is this information coming from? The DOJ is a tight ship, so I don't think it's coming from them. We know that, as mentioned, Maggie, Mark Short and also Jacobs, his attorney, did testify. Do you think that information is coming out perhaps from the Pence side?
Well, that is a really good question. what I can start with is my agreement with maybe a narrowing of my agreement of it's not coming from the DOJ. I will tell you to a certainty, like literally 99.9, it's no one on the grand jury and it's no one on that team that is specifically tasked with looking into this.
Yeah.
Why do I say that? Prosecutors at that level, their staff, the people that work with them, down to the folks that help keep their offices neat and tidy, as well as the grand jurors, are admonished, and it is part of what you come to breathe and live, that you would never leak something like this. Interesting tangential side note, I would have said that about the Supreme Court, but never mind. That will take us down
a different rumor is they were trying to keep Kavanaugh in line.
In line, right?
Yeah.
So my guess is maybe out of one of the IG offices, you would have to be looking at who has what to gain from the disclosure. Yeah, Mike Pence does. Does anybody really think Mike Pence is, by the way, going to be the candidate? No.
Mother does.
Maybe Mike Pence does. That's two.
And did you hear this? The guy, Anonymous, right, who wrote the book A Warning, was on CNN, and in response to Pence's contemporaneous speech given on Monday while Trump was speaking to the America First, MAGA captured think tank. I'm a think tank in its loosest possible sense of the words. The anonymous guy who wrote the book A Warning, said, Mike Pence, for those that don't know this, said, the president and I are, former President Trump and I agree on policy, we disagree on focus. If anybody can parse that out, please call into the show, because I have no idea what that means. Maybe it means, like, I won't actually engage in out loud racist tropes in an out loud attempt at overthrowing an election. But the anonymous guy said, Mike Pence's posture is erect, but his conscience is flaccid. This is what this guy said on CNN. So, and that's coming from a Republican. So Mike Pence, I think but that's interesting. If I was someone that was working on Pence's political machine, like on that side of what he was doing, I would be trying to get as much of that stuff out into the public eye as possible. I don't know if it helps DeSantis. Like, DeSantis's brand is like, I'm Trump, but I'm not actually Donald Trump, right? It's like, I'm Trump 2.0. Right, right. I mean, so I would think inspectors general, there could be someone in an IG's office, or even like, say, Manhattan District Attorney's office, that's really ticked off that DA is effectively letting that investigation come to a close. Now, I don't think that investigation, which focused more, as I understand it, on financial crimes, would necessarily have gotten access to that. But the disclosures, when you're engaging in those investigations, and I did corporate defense work, not criminal defense, but corporate civil defense work. I mean, the tactic was, oh, they want that information. Great. Let's give them 3 terabytes of information and see if they can hire 200 lawyers to go through it all. So I would be looking at those that have investigatory powers that can't get it done, or might be working for a political appointee that still has allegiance to Trump, people that it worked in investigatory ways that are ticked about the leadership's decision about what they're going to do, and or political foes of Trump, be they on the Democratic or Republican side. But I think Pence, if he's doing it, boy, man.
Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, friend of the Devil's Advocates, also reported in the Washington Post that talks about the, you know, DOJ focusing on Trump. They also put out there that Mark Meadows' phone, his phone data, his phone records were taken back in April. And, you know, we've been critical. We've been optimistic and hopeful on where Merrick Garland is. And as we talked about in the last segment, you know, he's been out more in the last 6 days, perhaps, than he has in the last 6 months. Do you think that they are farther ahead than most people have given them credit for? Or do you think that this is just, you know, as the world turns?
I don't want to be pessimistic, but I do want to make a couple of observations. The very first thing I always did as in any capacity in litigation where I was dealing with something that was at even approaching complicated, right? Is the first thing I do is I try to go get all of the social media feeds, all of the data feeds, all of the postings, all of the text message stuff. All of these providers can be subpoenaed. You can get that information. Sometimes it takes quite a long time to actually get through the Facebook, Metaverse, whatever this stuff is, the Instagram. I don't know what any of this is. Do you tweet? Whatever that is. Sometimes it takes a while to go through those companies' processes. Sometimes you do need court intervention. But that's the first thing that I would be doing, right? Because people are incredibly candid in these shorthanded ways of communicating. The fact that the first time Mark Meadows' emails, or excuse me, text messages or phone data were actually obtained by the DOJ, that was just in April. What's been happening since January 7th? Like, that's the, like, as soon as, well, let's say, what was the date when Biden took office? Like
January 20th.
20th, right? On the 21st, I'd be like, let's get the court and let's get a subpoena going for that data. Let's be sure it's not being lost. Now, here's another little thing that I wanted to make mention of very briefly. Is that under the law, under, whether you're talking about federal rules, federal regulations, state rules, lawyers and officials in the public sphere have contemporaneous and significant preservation obligations for data and records, okay? So the first category of laws that require you to do that is all the FOIA, you know, National Archives, Sunshine Laws. You cannot delete stuff permanently. Like, it just has to be maintained. The second thing that is unique to lawyers, lawyers have an obligation if they, if there is filed litigation or litigation is reasonably likely, to actually affirmatively go to their clients and ensure that they are preserving the data. Did anyone think that there wouldn't be some sort of legal ramifications after January 6th? I say this to say, we're all anxious. We're all eager to see accountability. Accountability means something. What I offer is that this is the beginning, and we will not be through all of the fallout, all of the investigations, all of the things that may flow through people's professional accreditations, lawyers being challenged for their bar licenses. This is the beginning. The most important part is who is accountable in the White House, who is accountable in the cabinet, right? It has to get there, or Merrick Garland has to come up and explain why it didn't. I hope that Merrick Garland has learned something from the exercise with the Robert Mueller investigation. And that is, this is not the time for legal doublespeak and niceties. Say what you need to say, say it clearly, and make sure the people in the back hear you. And then say it again, even louder, right? That's the point. Bill Barr was—
Has he said it though, Maggie? I mean,
that's my whole point. Like, if you're doing your job right as a Department of Justice official, as the Attorney General, you're not going to come out and tell people the ifs, ands, where's, buts, hows, right, and what fors of your investigation. That's not how it's done. But if at the end you cannot indict and likely convict, and if you don't convict or you choose not to indict, folks, that it is clear through the January 6th congressional hearings, people expect to be indicted. You had better come out and explain all of the facts, all of the documents, comprehensively, and then with a Bill Barr-esque summary that doesn't actually lie about the content of the investigation, right? Bill Barr is a brilliant politician and lawyer. You cannot take that away from him. What he did and how he architected a complete dismantling of the Mueller report before anyone had read the Mueller report was nothing short of political genius. I think Merrick
Garland—
Evil genius, yes. Merrick, it was a lie. I mean, right? But it was a damnedly good one. Merrick Garland needs to take a page out of that playbook, but deploy it in the public good. Again, make sure at the end of the day, you reach as far as you think you plausibly can with indictments. And don't be afraid to lose trials. You guys have heard me, you know, complain about prosecutors almost every time we talk about it, that the standard shouldn't be, I know that I'm going to get a conviction. The standard should be, is this incredibly important? Should this issue be given to a jury? And if you lose the case, you lose the case. Don't worry about the next office you're running for. So too here with Attorney General Garland. And there will be folks, I would be shocked if we actually see an indictment of Donald Trump. I'll just tell you that. Like, let's not—
I'll take that action.
Yeah, right? Oh, and please, I hope that I'm wrong, but I just think the likelihood of that is extremely thin. The interesting part about the
January 6th— You are harshing our bus right now.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to. You know me, I'm just pragmatic. It's not interesting, but it's accurate.
Maggie, go ahead.
I have no idea what I was going to say. What did you want to say, Mike?
Well, because I do watch As the World Turns of Politics, and it was the GOP gubernatorial debate Sunday. And then, to his credit, Dan O'Donnell, righty whitey talker, got all three of them in studio earlier today. They were going back and forth. But I wondered if you had any opinions. I mean, Becky Clayfish, the smartest girl in class, but that ain't exactly the honors class, if you know what I'm saying.
Okay, because I was giving you side-eye big time on that. It was throwing lots of shade.
Becky Did you Clayfish, watch the debate, though? I mean, compared to the Timms, the Ram Jam, and the Michaels. I mean, Michaels was BS in his way through that debate, sweating his upper lip off. He looked like Richard Nixon up there for just a minute.
He did look really bad. And I thought the thing that came into my mind is, one thing about Clayfish is the woman's been in front of a camera for a really long time. She's sort of like Wisconsin's Sarah Palin, but actually knows how to speak the king's English and does read a thing or two from time to time, not just all of the newspapers, all of them. I read all of the things. Michaels, everyone knew this, right? That the emperor has no clothes. Like, everyone knows that.
Very Trump-like in that regard. That's why you're in the endorsement.
No wonder they like when we build things. You can just see it. You can like envision the two of them poolside with like bikini clad cocktail waitresses serving them in the cabana, like talking to each other about how amazing they are, but talking about nothing about, you know, politics or meaningful public policy. Yeah, Michaels is an idiot. He's a good businessman. Oh, wait, did he inherit the business? Yes, he did. I digress. He's a political idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. That became plainly obvious. Does that matter to a single Republican voter?
They voted for Trump. Probably not.
Yeah, didn't in 2016. I, you know, again, it's sort of you're comparing the two dunces. Which one has the bigger hat on? I don't know who's got the bigger cone hat.
It's got to be Ram Jam. It's got to be Ram Jam. Although it's close. It's very, very close. Maggie
Dawn. Any idiot, right?
Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, Maggie Dawn, our good friend, will let you move on with the other activities of your life. But we miss you, and that's why we keep you on the radio so long.
Love you guys. Appreciate it.
Love you, Maggie Dawn.
Thanks. Thank you, Maggie Dawn.
See you.
Now, we're not quite done yet. We're going to actually take some calls in this big show. We promise. After the break at 844-967-2789, the Hump Day Happier Happy Hour. It rolls on to the finish.
Tedious in a trial.
Who here likes a good story about a bridge?